Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 9, Prahlad pacifies the Lord with prayers. Text 30.
Ekashtvameva jagare tamamushayatvam. Adyantayo pritagavasyasi majatan. Ajantayo pritagavasyasi majatascha. Shistva guna vyatikaram nijamaya yedam. Naneva te avistas tadanu pravista. Ekastvameva jagare tamamushayatvam. Adyantayo pritagavasyasi majatascha. Shistva guna vyatikaram nijamaya yedam. Naneva te avistas tadanu pravista.
Translation. My dear Lord, you alone manifest yourself as the entire cosmic manifestation. For you existed before the creation, you exist after the annihilation, and you are the maintainer between the beginning and the end. All this is done by your external energy through actions and reactions of the three modes of material nature. Therefore, whatever exists eternally and internally is you alone. Please repeat. My dear Lord. Grace, Srila Prabhupada. As stated in the Brahma Samhita 5.35,
Ekopyaso rachayitam jagadanda kotim yakchaktir asti jagadanda chayayadanta andantarasta paramanu chayantarastam govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami.
I worship the personality of Godhead, Govinda, who, by one of his plenary portions, enters the existence of every universe and every atomic particle, and thus unlimitedly manifests his infinite energy all over the material creation. To create this cosmic manifestation, Govinda, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, expands his external energy and thus enters everything in the universe, including the atomic particles. In this way, he exists in the entire cosmic manifestation. Therefore, the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in maintaining his devotees are transcendental, not material. He exists in everything as the cause and effect, yet he is separate, existing beyond this cosmic manifestation. This is also confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 9.4. The entire cosmic manifestation is but an expansion of the Lord's energy. Everything rests in him, yet he exists separately beyond creation, maintenance, and annihilation. The varieties of creation are performed by his external energy. Because the energy and the energetic are one, everything is one. Sarvam kalvidam brahma. Therefore, without Krishna, the Parabrahman, nothing can exist. The difference between the material and spiritual worlds is that his external energy is manifested in the material world, whereas his spiritual energy exists in the spiritual world. Both energies, however, belong to the Supreme Lord, and therefore, in a higher sense, there is no exhibition of material energy because everything is spiritual energy. The energy in which the Lord's all-pervasiveness is not realized is called material. Otherwise, everything is spiritual. Therefore, Prahlad says, Ekastvam eva jagad etam. You are everything. So this verse is very much dealing with Krishna's inconceivable energy, his Achintya Shakti. And when Prabhu was reading the translations just a few minutes ago to the Dhammadarastika, which was written by many thousands of years ago, and I'm just thinking the inconceivable energy of Krishna. There's many people. It says here in the purport, let's see, what's the sentence? The difference between the material and spiritual worlds is that his external energy is manifested in the material world, Mahamaya, whereas his spiritual energy exists in the spiritual world, Yogamaya. So we've Mahamaya and Yogamaya. So because we're existing now or living now in the kingdom of Mahamaya, then practicing spiritual life, engaging in spiritual life, devotional service, etc., is in the minority as opposed to the majority, because it's the kingdom of Maya like that. So when we were reading the translations this morning, and of course the Damodar Leela is that, as you know, Mother Yashoda was boiling some milk on the stove to make yogurt, and meanwhile Krishna and all the mothers here at the back, they didn't chant the verse today, just one lady chanted the verse, but all of the ladies at the back who have children, I'm sure there's quite a lot of them, they will know that you're on call when you've got a baby, a young baby from, I don't know, well, it can be quite old actually, it can go up to quite an age, but certainly when you've got a baby, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, even 6 years of age, you're really on demand 24/7. And particularly when they're younger, you're on demand 24/7 in terms of feeding them. So whatever you're doing as a mother, at any time, from anywhere, any moment, the baby can start letting you know that they want fed. And they usually do this by screaming. And usually, in a good, healthy grihastha relationship, there'll also be a husband. And the husband won't want to hear the baby crying. So when the baby starts crying, the husband will say, "Do something about that baby, screaming baby." So the thing that the mother does is she feeds the baby. So in this pastime of Damodar Leela, Mother Yashoda, she's busy in the kitchen. She's boiling milk and doing all sorts of things. And next thing, Krishna, he starts demanding he wants fed. So Mother Yashoda has to drop everything and she has to feed Krishna. But then when she does that, the milk starts to boil over. So then she puts Krishna aside and goes to deal with the milk. So then Krishna becomes annoyed. He breaks one of the pots of yogurt, butter, and starts eating it like that. So then Mother Yashoda, all in the pastime of transcendental love, she decides that Krishna has to be taught a lesson, has to be punished. He can't do this. Go into the kitchen and smash big pots. The pots are quite big as well. It wasn't like a little tiny pot. It's quite a big pot of yogurt. So this has to be, Krishna has to understand, you know, that he can't do all these things. So she decides to tie him up, and then we know the pastime, the rope's not long enough, etc., etc. Krishna breaks away. Then he pulls the grinding mortar between the two trees, and then Manigriva and Nalakubara are liberated. So as devotees, we're all sitting here. We're singing Damodarastika. We're up this morning for Mangalarti, a beautiful morning program, nice transcendental feeling. And then we're reading these pastimes of Krishna, and we're all sitting there, and there's absolutely not a care in the world. This is just absolutely wonderful. But then think to yourself that many of you, I presume, are working and etc. Of course, India may be a little bit different. So because I'm from the West, I'll speak from a Western perspective. So let's say we're in, you know, Bhaktivedanta Mana temple and we've just gone through the morning program. We've read the translations. And then many of the devotees, they go to work. And they're going to work with, you know, ethnic British people, the ones that speak with that Cockney accent, you know. And they go into work and they say, "Well, what did you do this morning?" And the devotee says, "Well, this morning I was at the temple, and this is the month of Damodar." And I said, "Month of Damodar, what does that mean?" "Oh, that's when Krishna, you know, this happened 5,000 years ago." "Actually, it happened 5,000 years ago, but it's also eternally manifesting in every single universe, the unlimited universes that exist. It's eternally manifesting. And what happened was his mother, Mother Yashoda, was boiling some milk. She was boiling some milk, and then Krishna started crying, and he wanted fed. And he got fed, and then the milk boiled over, so his mother had to put him down. The mother ran to sort out the milk. Krishna was annoyed, so there was this big pot of kind of yogurt butter in the room, and Krishna threw a stone at it, broke it. All the yogurt butter came out. He was eating some of it. There was a big mess on the floor. Then his mother said, "Oh, this is not good, Krishna. I have to teach you a lesson." So she tried to tie him up at a grinding mortar, but Krishna broke free. He pulled the grinding mortar between two trees. Trees came down, and two of these incredible personalities came out of this tree, and they were liberated, eternally liberated as Krishna's eternal servants. You probably wouldn't, if it was your boss, you probably wouldn't have your job for very much longer. So, but for us, we're sitting here, and this is all not just normal, this is glorious. This is what devotees do. They glorify Krishna and Krishna's pastimes, and they long to enter into those eternal pastimes of Krishna. But the difficulty is that in Maya's kingdom, Mahamaya, not only will you find it extremely difficult to get people to accept pastimes of Krishna, most of them don't even believe in the existence of God. They don't actually believe in the existence of God. And this is the great challenge for devotees, to somehow or other convince people not just of the existence of God, but then of the glorious relationship that you can develop with the Supreme Personality. And we should do that as expertly as possible. In the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, where Narada Muni is preaching to King Prachanabharashat, and instead of directly talking to the king, because the king was a great transcendentalist, but he kind of got entangled a little bit in material life, instead of doing that, he preached indirectly. And the king didn't feel threatened by that, or didn't feel that he was being preached at. And consequently, it was much easier for him to take the knowledge that was being offered by Narada Muni. So we also have to be like that, expert in our preaching. But our goal is to actually convince people to all come here. All the people in Mumbai, what is it, 12 million? 12 million, is it, in Mumbai? Yeah? Oh, 15, okay. 18. Any offers on 18? Sounds like an auction. So we'll say 18 million. It depends, I suppose, where you draw the boundaries. But so we have two temples. We have Juhu Temple and we have Chaupati. So you can take 9 million here and you can take 9 million in Juhu. Oh, three temples. Oh, I'm very sorry. Krishna consciousness is expanding faster than I can keep track of it, particularly here in Mumbai. Three. So what was it, 18? Six. So you can all take 6 million each. And attract everybody to come to participate in Krishna's pastimes. So this Achintya Shakti, this inconceivable energy, is actually, Prabhupada describes many, many times in different purports and different conversations, different lectures, that it's actually quite easy to enter into this inconceivable energy and these pastimes of Krishna if one is actually humble and understands their true position. Whereas pride disqualifies. Pride bars one from this, and humility guides one into these pastimes and this inconceivable energy and potency of Krishna. This verse from the Brahma Samhita, and another verse from the Brahma Samhita, the more famous one, Advaita Nachuta Manadim Ananta Rupam, again explaining the inconceivable nature of Krishna. So Krishna, he's one without a second, like that. He never decays. He's simultaneously the oldest, but at the same time he's the youngest. So, you know, these concepts are just absolutely inconceivable for anybody with a materialistic viewpoint or a materialistic view on life. But with a little humility, we can actually accept and understand these things. And Prabhupada explains that for the devotee, Krishna comes as eternal time, eternal bliss, and eternal knowledge. But for the non-devotee, he comes in the form of Kala Rupa, like that, in the form of death. And it is, at least I perceive it as being a very interesting thing, that of course we know that in order to enter into these pastimes, it's not just a question of accepting, it's a question of also being qualified, and in order to be qualified we have to, you know, give up our material life. So that's obviously the carrot or the apple or whatever that people who hold on to material life are attached to and makes it more difficult for them. But when you read things like, for the devotee, Krishna comes in the form of eternal Satchitananda, eternal time, bliss and knowledge. But for the non-devotee, comes as death, Kalarupa. For me, it's like, well, surely it's worth the endeavor to make the endeavor and to be a little humble, because the glorious result that one can achieve from doing that vis-a-vis the really negative really unfortunate result that will come from not doing it surely should be a natural inspiration for one to engage like that in spiritual life. But the actual fact of the matter is that for most people, and I was reading recently, Prabhupada was giving what I thought was kind of, in one sense, an unusual example, but he was talking about Krishna's inconceivable energy, his Achinta Shakti, and he was saying even in the material world, in that sense, there's many inconceivable things. And Prabhupada gives the example of the fingernail, and that the fingernail just continually grows. Actually, much to people's annoyance, you know, that they'll always have to be clipping their fingernails, what to speak of their toenails. And actually, that just reminds me now, because Sambha Prabhu, I don't know if he's sitting here now, but he said to me this morning, when he first saw me, he said, "You're sporting a very fashionable black toenail." I don't know if anybody else noticed that, but my right toenail is black. And so just in relation to Prabhupada saying the inconceivable growth of toenails, the reason I have a black toenail, I'll just, now that I've mentioned it, I'll just explain. Bhakti Marg Swami came to Ireland recently. He came for our double Rath Yatra in Dublin and Belfast. And then after that, if I asked the audience in general, what would you say Bhakti Marg Swami is famous for?
Walking.
So after the Rath Yatras are over, he wanted to walk. Actually, he stayed at my home. And, you know, every day we were going into our center backwards and forwards. And it's kind of really interesting when you're on home base, you've got other things to do and you're sort of looking after things. So sometimes we couldn't leave, you know, exactly after the program finished like that. You just tie up a few loose ends just for a few minutes. So it's really interesting. So I would be driving Maharaj home. But if the delay was more than like 2 minutes, he'd say, "Oh, it's okay, Bhagosh, I'll walk." So he'd walk on. Like, and he'd never been there before, but somehow or other he knew where to go just from whatever. And he'd walk the 3 kilometers home or whatever it may be. So anyway, after the Rath Yatras, he was going on a walk from Belfast to from Belfast to Cork, which is roughly about 270 miles, like that. You shouldn't be astonished at that. He's walked across Canada, which is, I think, about, which is, I think it's across Canada, 3,000 miles. So 270, hey, you know, what's that? Anyway, he was walking from, and I promised him that I would go out for at least one day on the walk. And that's funny. What's funny about that? Anyway, I promised that. And so I think it was the second last day before he finished the walk, I met up with him and we walked from a place called Kilkenny to Waterford. And Kilkenny to Waterford is about 40 kilometers. So we did that in one day. We started at 5 o'clock in the morning and we finished, I think, about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So it was like an 11-hour walk, whatever. You can divide that into 40 and find out what we were doing per hour. Anyway, so I went out and I put these special walking shoes on, which I thought was a really good idea. But, you know, normally I always wear shoes that don't have laces, but these had laces. Anyway, we were walking. I suppose about halfway into the walk, I felt a little uncomfortable. My nail just felt a little uncomfortable, but I didn't think much about it. Anyway, by the time I got to the end of the walk, and then particularly the next day, my toe was about 3 times the size it should have been, because the nail had caught in the top of the shoe, and it had lifted a little bit, and then it got cut or something, and an infection or going, it's all this to go on a walk, and then they have this big hair kind of problem. So that's why I have a black toenail, just in case anyone's wondering. It's just settling down from the walk with Bhakti Marg Swami, and it is all his fault. Actually, just before I finish that, an ironic little continuation of that is that a couple of days later, I was in Bhaktivedanta Manor and meeting with some devotees, and they were going on a sponsored walk. In a few days' time, at the weekend, they were walking across the 3 peaks of the Yorkshire Dales, which is about a 20-mile walk, but it's a little more austere because it's kind of up and down and up and down. And because I had this, I was limping at the time, when I came into the room to meet them to pay obeisances, I paid obeisances, but my right foot was up in the air behind me because I couldn't put my foot on the ground. So they asked me what was wrong, and I told them, and then they told me about the walk, and I said, oh, make sure you cut your toenails before you go on the walk. And they said they had got a list from some walking club about the 20 most vital things you do before setting out on a long walk. And top of the list was, you should clip your toenails. So if any of you are going on a long walk in the future, make sure you do that. Okay, so I diverted there, and now I completely forget where. Oh, Prabhupada. Prabhupada's example. He was giving the example that it's actually, from a material point of view, it's pretty inconceivable. You clip your fingernails, but they immediately start growing again. And if I ask somebody, how and why do your fingernails grow? In fact, they even say that the fingernails continue to grow a little bit after you've left your body, which is also even kind of more inconceivable. So that's just a material example, but it's quite inconceivable. So why should we doubt, or why should we, when we see things in the material world that are kind of inconceivable, why should we doubt that there is, that from a spiritual perspective, things can be even so much more inconceivable? And just so as I wouldn't forget, I wrote down a little list this morning of things in the material world that are, if not totally inconceivable, are kind of interesting. So one is, as we'll all remember as children, well, maybe not all of us, but certainly I will remember, the first time that my parents ever brought me to a magic show. And you go to a magic show and you see these magicians doing all these tricks and you are just totally bewildered. He's pulling things from outside of behind his ears and, you know, he's pulling things out of a hanky and just making things appear like that. What to speak of when he gets to cutting somebody in half. It looks, wow, how is he doing that? So, you know, these things, they're illusions, but for a young child, they're quite inconceivable. And then more things that are obviously related, actually, to Krishna and creation. But the way that we see a seed, we plant a seed, a little, you know, any little seed that you see, and there's nothing to it. It's a tiny little brown or whatever color it is. There's nothing to it whatsoever. You put it into the soil, you let the elements take over with rain and sun, and next thing it can grow into a beautiful, aromatic and colorful flower like that very quickly, or over a period of time it can grow into an incredible large oak tree or whatever it may be. Banyan here in India, these wonderful banyan trees. So these are actually inconceivable events. How the caterpillar turns into a butterfly, beautiful butterfly like from a caterpillar. And then, so they're kind of wonderful, inconceivable things. Then sort of strange, inconceivable, how people accept something and don't accept something else. Years ago, in Ireland, we used to travel. Our main temple is in Northern Ireland, which is just across a border. Northern Ireland and Southern Ireland are kind of, in that sense, two separate, not really, but they, politically they're two separate countries. Southern Ireland is Irish and the northern part is kind of UK or Britain. And we used to travel and you would come to a checkpoint where you would have a checkpoint like that. And there'd be soldiers at the checkpoint. So the devotees, what they would do, particularly coming back from our main temple, which was very close to the border, we would always bring some Mahaprasadam. So we'd bring some burfis or some Simply Wonderfuls. And as we're going across the border, we would give them to the soldiers. And the soldiers, the interesting thing was these soldiers were always very, very young. They were always like 17, 18, like that, on the border. And they were thrilled. They loved them. And some of them, we got to know them quite well. And they were really enthusiastic when the devotees would come because they would know they'd be getting some sweets. You know, oh, what have you got for us today? Is it sandesh? Is it burfi? Is it whatever? Laddu? Like that. So we would give them like that. And then one day we came, and there was an older soldier there, and he came out to us and he said, you must never do this again. Give bribes to our soldiers. Bribes? We're just giving some Mahaprasadam. So we had to stop. We couldn't give that anymore. So giving a sweet to a poor young soldier on a border, a devotee doing that, is conceived as a bribe. Yet I saw on the BBC News website the other day that Barack Obama, in his presidential campaign, will receive hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars in donations. So that's accepted as okay, but a devotee giving a soldier a checkpoint, a sweet, is considered a bribe. Another inconceivable thing for me personally, again, is, and this is to do with religion, and it's the religion, the main religion in the UK, which, does anybody know what the official or main religion in the UK is? Thank you very much, Babananda Prabhu. The Anglican Church, the Church of England, where the monarchy, Queen Elizabeth II, is the defender of the faith. But if you historically retrace the establishment of the Church of England, just if you historically retrace the establishment of the modern-day Hare Krishna movement, it goes back to the advent of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he inaugurated the Sankirtan movement, the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. If you retrace the origin of the Anglican Church, it comes because there was a particular king in the 1500s, called Henry VIII, and he married a lady from France or Spain, and she wasn't able to give him a child. So because she wasn't able to give him, he very much wanted an heir to the throne, a male heir to the throne, that he didn't want this wife anymore because she couldn't give him a child. But at that point, there was only one church, which is now in what we now know as the Catholic Church. That's the only church or religion that existed in that part of the world. And they didn't allow divorce. You couldn't separate from your wife. So Henry had a problem because later on, I learned this in school, divorce, beheaded, he had six wives. Divorce, beheaded, died. Divorce, beheaded, survived. So he was quite adept at beheading his wives, you know. That wasn't a problem for him. But the first one, it was a complication because she was, I think, Spanish, but married to a French king or something like that. Oh, not married, she was married to Henry, but she was related to the French monarchy. So if he beheaded her, it would meant that he would have had to go to war with France and Spain, and he didn't want to do that, so he had to get a divorce. So what he did was, he couldn't get a divorce because the Pope and the Archbishop wouldn't give him a divorce, so he created his own religion. And that is what is now the main religion in the UK. So for me, it's kind of inconceivable that if you know that history, how you would not think, well, what sort of basis is that to start a religion on? And why should I continue following it? So there's all these anomalies and kind of inconceivable things going on in the material world that, why should we consider that inconceivable aspects of spiritual life are so unbelievable or so difficult to accept? And then, of course, in the material world, there are more negative things. Another thing that always bewilders me, again in the West, I'm sure it doesn't happen here in India, how children will throw rocks or big boulders from motorway bridges to hit oncoming traffic, or they'll put big rocks or boulders on train lines so that when trains come, they'll have big train crash and hundreds of people will die, and for them this is playing. That reminds me of the analogy that Prabhupada gives. He gives the analogy, well, as I remember it, related to the amount of money that governments spend on ridiculous, frivolous things that provide no benefit or no welfare, no good for the people that they're meant to be serving. And of course, governments only get their money by taxing the people. So that's how they get their money. So people work hard, they give X percentage of their earnings to the government, then you expect your government to invest wisely in your welfare. So Prabhupada says, they have spent trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars on space travel. And what do they have to show for it? All they have to show for it is some dust. They bring back some dust. So the people are paying this tax to their government. The government are making these tin cans that they shoot up into space. And then they come back and say, hey, look what we've got. We've got some dust. And, oh, Jai, Hari Bol. You know, as if this is a wonderful, wonderful kind of thing. So so Prabhupada gives the example then of the children, and they see some frogs playing, they see some frogs, and the frogs are going about their business. And the children then start picking up stones, and they start throwing the stones at the frogs. And the frogs turn around and say, hey, what are you doing? What are you doing? And the children say, oh, we're just playing. And the frogs say, you play, we die. And Prabhupada uses that example then in relation to citizens of a country. The governments play, meanwhile the people suffer, and suffering and suffering like that. So these are strange, inconceivable things that go on. And of course, people in general, They're denying the existence of God. This is the conclusion. They're denying that there's an achinta shakti or an inconceivable energy. They're denying the existence of God. But they deny that at their peril, at their great loss. Because in denying that, they cannot engage in devotional service. And because they cannot engage in devotional service, they stay rooted in the material world. And because they stay rooted in the material world, they continue to suffer from birth, death, old age and disease and all the unlimited kinds of sufferings that come with the material world. And in this particular pastime, there's one verse. It's when Prahlad, I think it's when Lord Nrsimhadev is offering Prahlad whatever he wants, whatever boon he wants, etc. And Prahlad says, Shose tato nimukta chetasa, nimukta chetasa indriyata, indriyata. That the only thing that I want, the only thing that I want is to help to stop the suffering of all living creatures, all living beings in the material world. So in the footsteps of Prahlad Maharaj, that's also our raison d'etre, or that's our a mission that we have as devotees, that we've been so fortunate, however, every one of us sitting here has an individual story to tell, how we came in contact with Krishna consciousness. But actually how we came in contact is not so important or relevant. The fact is that we did come in contact, and now that we have this glorious benefit of devotional service and association of devotees, prasadam, etc., that in the mood of Prahlad Maharaj, we should now look outwards and say, see all these other 18 million people, or whatever it is, in Mumbai and beyond, and see that all of them actually, in one way or another, if they do not have a connection to spiritual life and to devotional service, that they're suffering, and that we should try to alleviate their suffering by however we do it doesn't really matter, but by convincing them to take to a spiritual path. Okay, it's 25 past nine. I think I will stop there. Bhavanandavaru?
In 1970, Prabhupada told us, Brahmana means no nails.
Jai. No nails beyond a certain distance, I presume. Yeah. I really appreciate that, because when you said no nails, I was thinking, boy, I don't want to be a Brahmana, because that's really painful. Clip short, that's good. Of course, if we clip them a little too short sometimes, then at least that little bit of suffering we can understand, you know, to help us continue on the spiritual path, that we don't want to suffer anymore. Just when you said, don't ask me why, but just when you said that, I was thinking of the example that Prabhupada gives in relation to the heavenly planets and then ultimately the spiritual world, that in the heavenly planets you have so many wonderful, like the roads are made of pearls, they're made of jewels, they're made of coral. And then Prabhupada gives the example, in the material world, the roads aren't made of those things. And also, what we use the roads for is completely different than what we in the spiritual, heavenly planet spiritual world to what we use them in the material world. And he just gives the example of, in order for us to get around supposedly more conveniently, we create the car. Actually, in London now, they did a survey, and the average speed in the centre of London, traffic, is something like 12 miles, or probably miles, because they do miles in the UK, I think it's 12 miles per hour. The average speed of the horse and cart in Victorian England was 14 miles an hour. So they're actually going slower with their cars than they did with the horse and carriage. But the car does so much more damage pollution-wise. Also the roads, they always have to fix the roads. So Prabhupada gives the example, just to have a car, you have to have unlimited miles of roads and motorways. And any of you that drive will know that every time you get in a car and drive, there's always roadworks. You know, there's always a nuisance of roadworks like that. And then you also need, with cars, there's accidents, and you need insurance, and there's tax, and there's all these, you have to keep the maintenance of the car up. And it's all because people are thinking having a car is more convenient than not having a car. And at some point, I was making the point that at some point we've got to come to the realization that actually, no, simple living and high thinking is actually what will make us happy and not all these modern conveniences. And on that note, we see in the world right at this very moment in time that so many, this credit crunch thing and so many things are happening. Again, I saw on the BBC News website the other day, it said the headline was, up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down. Why do we need stock markets? So there's so many problems happening. Yet in all the, in so many of Srila Prabhupada's conversations in the 70s, so we're talking over 30 years ago, Prabhupada's talking about, one devotee asked him in one conversation, Prajapati Prabhu, says to Prabhupada, I think it was during the oil crisis in the early 70s, 72, says Srila Prabhupada, how do we cure inflation? What's the solution to inflation? And Prabhupada says, very simple. The paper currency is linked to the gold standard or some precious metal. Once it's linked to a precious metal, that controls inflation. So they broke that link. They officially broke that link sometime. I'm not sure exactly they officially broke that link. And now we see the problems that have ensued. So that's another thing that can help us actually in our preaching and in convincing people that the wisdom of the Vedas and the wisdom of the previous acharyas, it always continues to be proven right time and time again. There may be some brief period of time where certain material situations seem to be wonderful and seem to be going very, very well, but actually they always ultimately collapse. I heard two devotees talking yesterday, and one was saying to the other, they were talking about the Roman Empire, and one said to the other, the Roman Empire lasted for 400 years. That's a really long time. Well, it's a really long time, relatively speaking, but it's an incredibly short time. We read in the Bhagavad Gita that about time and the creation of the universe and the different yugas, etc., and kalpas and how long they take. But, you know, so 400 years is absolutely nothing. It practically doesn't exist. But the point is, even relatively, it appears like a long time, it collapses. We had the Greek Empire, you had the Roman Empire, you had the British Empire, and they've all collapsed. And now it seems like the American Empire is also beginning to collapse like that. But anyway, thank you, Bhavananda Prabhu. We will all, straight after breakfast, we will clip our fingernails. Yes.
Hello, Haribol.
It's on.
I thought it was very funny when they came back from outer space with the moon dust. They all went Haribol, Haribol, Jai. Yeah. So Prabhupada's back was itchy all the time, and he liked it to be scratched, and I was the best scratcher because I let my nails grow a little longer so that they. And he would go, Bhavanan. He'd go like that. Meaning, get up on the bed and scratch my back. And I would scratch his back with my long nails for hours. So in pursuit of devotional service, sometimes you can even transcend brahminical rules and regulations.
Nayasha Karichid Rajan. No one knows the plan of the Lord. So if we grow our fingernails long, I'm sure that we can engage them in devotional service. Srila Prabhupada ki! Hare Krishna!